The Web's Michael Smith. It's episode 93 of the Canes Cast. And you know what?
What?
We're living in the state of hockey.
Sorry, Minnesota.
Yeah, taking it.
Yep. Your trademark is ours. It is actually trademarked.
Well, it's. Do we have to pay Minnesota now?
You know, I don't know. We'll work.
You know people there. I'm a Vikings fan.
So that's true.
We've given money to that state in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, yes. So we can all work it out.
Yeah, it's all good.
Minnesota's Minneapolis, St. Paul. Good cities to visit, by the way.
I'm on their train on a toboggan is a sled, not a hat. So So half of us at least will agree with that.
Yeah. Not
so. I know you won't. We've had this before, isn't it?
That's native North Carolinian coming out of me.
Yeah, no. Can we then... All right, if you'll do that, can you then give them that a barbecue is when you have people over to your house to grill?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yep.
All right. Thank you. Yep. All right, good. Look at that. See, folks? An accord, and now we can move forward. But what a year for hockey for North Carolina, and it ends with the Charlotte Checkers winning the Calder Cup, winning three straight in Chicago.
Four straight overall.
Yeah. We thought for sure that that series would at least come back to Charlotte for one game.
Yeah.
But man, oh man, what a great job done by Mike Vellucci, the Charlotte Checkers organization, top to bottom, and the players that got the job done against a really good Chicago Wolves team that features some players who might be knocking on the door of being in the NHL or already are going to be NHL players next year. This was just a formality for them. But you know, the Checkers, just the way they played, you were at games in Charlotte. This was the best team from day one in the AHL, and they were the best team on the last night of the AHL as they got to hoist the cup.
Yeah, that's it wasn't a Tampa Bay Lightning thing, you know, where they just run through the regular season and then get bounced early in the playoffs or even lose in the finals. This team was extremely talented. They fought through. I think one of the underrated aspects of this season for the Charlotte Checkers is the fact that they did have to fight through roster changes, lots of rosters, some key roster changes.
How about
too.
In the playoffs, you don't have your captain, you don't have Jake Bean, one of your dynamic offensive players on the blue line. You don't have Hayden Fleury, who you could say is probably your best all-around defenseman that you've had for the majority of the season, because Rod Brind'Amour and the staff up here with Carolina decided it would be better for him to play in Charlotte than to just sit and practice in Carolina. So he was sharp. Plus Clark Bishop comes in and out of the lineup for them. Greg McKegg, who was counted on to be a Charlotte Checker this year, well, he's with Carolina, and we know the run that he had on. And just they found pieces to fit all of the holes that they would get. Players stepped up. Some players found another level for their game. Mm-hmm. And then when they got those guys back, they all came together and went on this great run.
I mean, for a team to win 51 of its 76 games,
that's
in the regular season. That's it's unbelievable, too, when you consider the fact that the roster did undergo so many changes throughout the regular season. Even when they lost a guy like Greg McKegg, who was a great player in the AHL for the Checkers, or a guy like Saku Manilainen, they still found ways to find wins. And that's a big credit to what it's a big credit to a number of people, to the Hurricanes organization for finding depth and having a system in which they've developed players and developed winners. It's a credit to Mike Vellucci and his coaching staff down in Charlotte for being able to rally the group of 20 that might have changed on a night-to-night basis. It's the job that they were able to do this season in Charlotte is very impressive. It's an unbelievably skilled group. It's a very young group, and it's very talented, and it speaks volumes about how bright the future is for the Hurricanes. When you look at the pieces that are in Charlotte, the pieces that might become staples on the Hurricanes roster one day, you have a lot to be excited about. And for Mike Vellucci to lead the Checkers the way he did this season, he did a really great job with that team, getting them to buy in on any given night. And once they got the pieces back in the playoffs, like you said, they stumbled early against the Marlies, but then once they found their rhythm, they're in the Eastern Conference Finals. they rolled right on through, won that series in six games. That was probably their toughest opponent of the playoffs, too, the defending Calder Cup champion, Toronto Marlies. Not that Chicago wasn't talented. They are talented. They were a more veteran squad. But Toronto, the defending champs, very talented, just like the Hurricanes. You look at those two organizations, the Maple Leafs and the Hurricanes, both have a lot of talent in their farm system. And so for the Hurricanes to, or excuse me, the Checkers, the baby Hurricanes, to defeat the Marlies, that was going to be their toughest opponent. They were able to do that. Even though they lost game one of the Calder Cup Finals in overtime, they weren't panicking. They were satisfied with their game, and then they rattled off four straight wins. I don't think any of us really expected that to happen or for them to go on the road and win three straight, but that's just what this team has done this season. They've just found ways to win, and really nice job. Really happy for a lot of people down there. The staff's unbelievable there in Charlotte, and to see them get to celebrate with a championship was a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, and what again, great job done by Mike Vellucci in his 2 years behind the bench in Charlotte. He's just been great. He's pushed every button, and then I think we've said it. I think I said it last week on the Canescast. The biggest difference between the Canes in their minor league system this past year versus years past was it would be, all right, we've got an injury. We need a player. Who's the best player? Send him. And then you do that, and you send a guy who's been playing as a forward, we'll use that terms, a guy who's been playing 18 minutes a night in a top-line role or a second-line role. Now you put him on the fourth line in a checker spot, and it's something that he doesn't do, and it doesn't fit, and why doesn't it work? This year, we saw it. It was, this is the position that we need. Who is the best guy you have to fill that position in Charlotte? And I know that, and you got it too, when we put out the announcement of this player being called up from Charlotte. And the fans are like, oh, why isn't it this guy? Because you didn't want to call up Marty Natchez to take the spot of a fourth line player. If you wanted him up, you wanted him in a position to succeed.
Right.
In a position where he would do what he was doing in Charlotte. And that's what I think was so good this year for the organization. It wasn't just, we want that player up here. It was, no, this is the player that's best suited. What's the role that you need him for? This is the guy that you want for it.
Yeah.
And I think it really paid dividends for this club because everybody knew their role. Nobody felt out of position.
Well, and imagine, too, what this type of season does for Marty Natchez's development. A guy who gets to play on a championship team in his first year in North America. He was on good teams over in Czech, too.
Yep.
And then to come over here and play on a championship team, play, we'll call it the whole season.
Yeah.
He was up here for October with the Hurricanes, got five or six games, or no, I think he only played one game in Edmonton, actually, but was up here for the first month. So sort of got his feet wet in terms of what to expect in the NHL, but then went down to Charlotte and spent really the whole season down there. And I think maybe had to find his footing there early, you know, find where he fit in on that team. But once he hit his stride, and I think he hit his stride very well, especially once the Checkers acquired Tomas Yurko, or the Hurricanes, I guess I should say, acquired Yurko, and those two Czechs were able to really bond on the Checkers. I think that did a lot for Natchez's development, and then for him just to play that whole season, get that experience, get that culture of winning, get used to that. I think it's going to help him tons when you look ahead to this summer and then potentially to next season when he's going to want to come into training camp and earn his spot on this Hurricanes roster.
Yeah, he played seven games this year. I didn't want to be there.
He did play seven games.
If you go back to what was going on, because it was last year. He played the one game in Edmonton and then went down to went back overseas. This year he was up for the start and then they sent him back down.
That's correct.
Yeah,
wow, seasons. I've completely spaced out in
Don't
October.
Worry about that, buddy. I didn't want to beat you were rolling, so I didn't want to be that guy in the middle of the – well, actually, because there are other people out there who are going to be that for you, I figured I'd let you just go. And then instead of us getting that together, I just figured I'd put it all together right now.
Well, there you go.
So there you go. Yeah, seven games with the Canes, had a goal and an assist.
Yes, he did.
Yes.
I do remember that goal. Go. Scored in Tampa Bay.
That is right.
Didn't have to look that one up. That was his last game here, I believe, before he was assigned to Charlotte, where he spent the rest of the season.
Yep. And 64 games with the Checkers, 16 goals, 36 assists.
Yeah.
And that's in the regular season.
And I think he got better, too. They tried him at center for a bit, and I think he really found his home on the wing. Now, whether he plays wing or center in the NHL, of course, remains to be seen. It might be a situation with Aho where he plays the wing his first few seasons before going to center, or maybe he's just better as a winger.
Maybe.
But once he moved to wing and Patrick Brown centering him and Yurko was an excellent line, and I think it was a big season for Nate Jess's development to have that consistency down in Charlotte, to play big minutes that he wasn't going to play here at his age, to be able to play those big minutes down in Charlotte and be relied upon and finish it off with the Calder Cup is, I think, huge for his development.
Yeah, absolutely. And, again, more developing players down in Charlotte who this run is only going to benefit, mm-hmm. is only going to make them better because of the experience they have. And how about the congratulations to the AHL playoff MVP, Andrew Podorolski? He was unbelievable this postseason, just putting up points left and right, and was huge in game five in the clincher. But he was just been a points machine for this Checkers team in the playoffs.
He's one that you know you can just rely upon for points in the AHL. And he's had a handful of NHL games up here with the Hurricanes throughout the last couple of seasons. But he's one where in the regular season, he was their points leader.
Yep.
In the playoffs, he was their points leader. He was the guy that you relied upon, and he did it all injured in the playoffs too. So that's a big testament to just, you know, what he was willing to do in order to make his team successful. A really good season for Podorolski, who I believe is a restricted free agent this upcoming summer. If I'm correct, he might be a Group 6 unrestricted free agent. You can check that real quick.
I will for you. I am now evidently the
The ombudsman
of the show
and co-host.
Really? Yeah, I don't know if it's ombudsman or if it's more just
you're the fact checker.
Well, we're our own people. Like, so, and every time we say we'll put our best people on it for the Canes cast.
Yeah, it's just us.
It's just me and Michael Smith. We are our best people.
It's like Jason Shia doing his radio show. It's just him. He's pressing all the buttons and playing his commercials and everything.
Indeed he is. Yes, he is a unrestricted free agent of the Group 6 variety.
There you go. So he's a certain age limit and hasn't played a certain number of NHL games. So he'll be a Group 6 unrestricted free agent. But that's somebody who you need depth players who you can rely upon, and he's certainly proven to be reliable. But, you know, now being MVP, the Calder Cup playoffs, and a Calder Cup champion,
he becomes a lot more attractive to other mm-hmm. organizations. Not necessarily that guarantees an NHL spot, but maybe just maybe somebody has a spot for an Andrew Podorolski now in the NHL because of the success that he had in the AHL.
Yep.
So,
and I'll be interested to see, too, if Tomas Yurko, who was on an AHL-only deal, gets an NHL deal heading into the summer, because he, I think, certainly proved himself at that level. He's played in the NHL before. Now maybe you see a two-way deal or something come about for Yurko.
Yeah, there are a couple of questions that the Canes have with players mm-hmm. that are down in Charlotte who you look at it and you're like, are they NHL players? Are they not? But they're players you want in your organization. And when I say are they or are they not, it's are they a consistent 82-game NHL player, or are they a plug-and-play player that you love to have in the organization? They're great because they're going to show guys in the AHL, the young players, how to play the game the right way. And then they're responsible players when you call them up in the NHL. Not necessarily going to come in and score 35, but they might come in and score 5 or 15, whatever it is that you need during that time.
Yeah. Patrick Brown, another unrestricted free agent. He's one that was unquestionably the leader of that Checkers team. had a really good season in that regard, just helping to bring that locker room together. I mean, that's the one thing. When you look at what the Hurricanes were able to accomplish, what Rod Brind'Amour did, what Justin Williams did, that it speaks volumes about what they were able to do in that locker room to bring that group together.
Yeah.
What Mike Vellucci was able to do and what Patrick Brown were able to do in Charlotte mirrors a lot of that that same rhythm that the Hurricanes found in their locker room here. And because you don't win championships with a locker room that's not close, that's not full of really family, of brothers. You never hear a championship team go, well, we kind of hate each other. We just went out and played and whatever. But this locker room, much like the one here in Raleigh, the locker room in Charlotte was incredibly close. And Hayden Fleury, a guy who sort of went in and out of that locker room all season long, said as much. He said, look, it's not that hard to come here and fit in because it's a close group of guys. They make you feel welcome, and they're hanging out outside of the rink. You smile on when you come to the rink for practice or for game day. So it's about building that culture. What the Hurricanes were able to do here this year mirrored a lot of what the Checkers were able to do down in Charlotte this year, and that's it's a bright future for this organization, as we saw this year with the Hurricanes' run to the Eastern Conference Final. That's just the beginning for this organization. And for the Checkers, they're not going to go away anytime soon either. They're going to be a force in the AHL next year as well.
And not to single out players, but that's what I'm going to do. But what does it say about the character of Patrick Brown, Hayden Fleury, Clark Bishop, to the point, the guys who were on the shuttle back and forth pretty much all year, to not go back to Charlotte and mope or complain, but to want to be a part of it and to want to win a title. You know, Hayden Fleury could have been one of those guys who's like, no, I'm an NHL player. No, he went to Charlotte and wanted to play there and win a title. So I think those guys, Clark Bishop, who stepped in and did a great job early on for the Carolina Hurricanes. You know, he scores his first goal that odd way against the Anaheim Ducks in the NHL. But, you know, here's a guy who comes in, was playing very well for Rod Brind'Amour and the NHL club, and then he gets hurt, and then he gets sent back down to Charlotte, and that's kind of it. And he could have been in one of those situations of, well, that's not fair. Went back down to Charlotte, was hurt in Charlotte, but when he got called upon to play, you know, did exactly what he was supposed to do. Those three guys stand out for me because if you get people in the organization that buy-in, we heard it all year, the buy-in from the NHL club. You had to get the buy-in for what we were going to do. You get it in an organization, that's when special things start to happen. And I think that we saw that this year with the Hurricanes and now with the Checkers that you get to that point.
And those pieces start to get laid. You know, Rod Brind'Amour was named head coach in May, and then he presides over development camp just over a month later in June. And that's really when you start to lay this foundation of a changed culture, of a vision that Rod Brind'Amour has, that the Hurricanes have, a vision of the future of what they want this team to be. So those pieces start getting put in place in development camp, but then day one of training camp is really when the message was, look, this is what we want to be. We no longer want to be We no longer want to say, okay, we'll make playoffs and see what happens. We want to be the best team in the NHL.
Yep.
That was the vision from day one of training camp. And you have a lot of these guys who played with the Charlotte Checkers this year were in training camp. So they got that message. And they took it down to Charlotte with them. Mike Vellucci took that message down to Charlotte with them and just built on it. And then you have this system where you have the big club that's successful. You have the AHL club that's successful. And these are lasting habits you're creating. I think Vellucci said after winning the trophy, it's the message is that mediocrity is not acceptable anymore. And that now you have two clubs, and the Hurricanes and the Checkers, who want to be the best in their respective leagues. And I think it goes a long way for the organization as a whole and for the development of these young players.
Yeah, and it's just one of those things where now that you're on the path, got to stay on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that becomes the tough thing, and that is one thing I'm going to be very curious as we get to the start of next season. that the head coach of the Hurricanes kept stressing. You know, this is basically for them, they don't know. This is kind of, you know, it's free lunch. What happens next year when it's expected
yeah.
that you're going to be a playoff team, that you're going to get to this to make that? It's a little bit different playing with that burden on your shoulders as opposed to the burden of, oh, nobody expects you to do it. It changes when it's everybody expects you to mm-hmm. do it. And you run to the Eastern Conference Finals, and I think that the Canes' offseason plans are to try to bring this team back intact as much as it can, improve in certain areas that they want to. We'll get into that, of course, all summer long and a little bit on this episode of the Canes Cast. But that's going to be the interesting dynamic. But the Checkers winning a championship, this team that was so young making it to the Eastern Conference Finals, the Everblades, some players who we might be seeing in Charlotte next year who were playing down in Florida, they make it to a conference finals. When I talk about the state of hockey, how about NC State's club team making it to the Final Four
yeah.
in Dallas? So there was a lot of success. So we'll see how you play when the expectations are. Now you're going to do that again, right? You're going right. to be even better. And I always caution people, like when a rookie comes in and has an awesome year and everybody thinks, oh, well, next year he scored 20 this year, he'll score 30 the next year because he's got a year under his belt. Now there's a book on you. Now there's what you want to do. There's breaking down tape. People know tendencies.
Right.
Can you do what you did last year again? That's basically a very successful second year after having some success. And then the third year is where you start to say, okay, yeah, we can do it again. Now why can't we be better? Take yeah. off from there. So it's going to be interesting.
One thing we talked a lot about this year was how the Hurricanes used their goaltenders, especially down the yeah. stretch with Peter Mrazek and Curtis McElhinney, sort of using both of them in a routine sort of 1A, 1B
yep.
Kind of situation. And how about the Checkers basically doing the same with Alex Nedeljkovic and Dustin Tokarski, especially not so much the 1A, 1B situation, because it was definitely Alex Nedeljkovic was their starting goaltender. But
in the regular season.
In those back-to-back situations in the playoffs, because the AHL schedule, even in the playoffs, is a little wonky. And so you've got big gaps in between, travel days when the series
switch. And then back-to-back games.
Right, and then back-to-back games. So just like in the regular season when you saw the Hurricanes use both goaltenders in back-to-backs, so too did the Checkers use both Alex Nedeljkovic and Dustin Tokarski. And Tokarski was great. He was undefeated in a Checkers sweater this season. And even though Alex Nedeljkovic got that Game 3 win in Chicago, Vellucci and his staff chose to stick with the routine they had and went to Tokarski yeah. in Game 4. And that's that. You have to – it's trusting of your goaltenders yep. to be able to do that. And for Nedeljkovic, too, to be of the mindset of, okay, you know, I won a game, but I'm going to sit yep. this game, not letting that sort of eat at him. And then he comes back in Game 5 and, yep. and has another great game. I think he made 26 saves in the decisive Game 5. Really just great usage by the Checkers of using both goaltenders while Chicago rode Oscar Dansk. For all five games, Dansk Revolution?
I thought you were
no.
falling apart to halftime like Fallout Boy.
How about Vegas? Kind of a tough.
How about Vegas?
Vegas.
I'm willing to go. Isn't there an award ceremony coming up there?
There is. But losing their big club losing in the finals their first year, and then their AHL club losing in the finals their second year.
Yeah.
Sorry, Vegas.
I mean,
not really, but
no, that's you're spoiled. You're two,
yeah, really.
2 years old, and you've almost had two championships.
Yeah.
No, sorry here.
Yeah,
spoiled. So, a few other things to talk about though in the hockey world. One of the things we've had enough time, we can go back and review, and we're going to try to do this as a piecemeal. It's not a summer series, and we're not going to do the Mount Rushmore of the Carolina Hurricanes or anything like that, because Michael and I, well, from my point, I know that we can put together one good show a week for you and not have to go down that. But we can kind of look back on the season that was and review a player review thing. If I asked you who was the most unsung player but was important to the success of the Carolina Hurricanes this year, because we could do who was the team MVP and who is this and who is that. But the one player that didn't get the fanfare, didn't get the notoriety, but was integral to the Carolina Hurricanes having the season that they had and finishing what they did. There are three names that I have that I don't think they've got the attention that was deserved.
Mm-hmm.
But without them, I don't know if the Canes were a team that went as far as they did or made the playoffs without them.
Okay.
First one, Lucas Walmark.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. He's not a flashy one. He's not going to show up on the score sheet a whole lot. But the fact that he was able to step up into a top six center role when Jordan Staal was out saved the Hurricane season, unquestionably, because Jordan Staal's absence easily could have sunk the team. Rod Brind'Amour has said as much as he believed that it probably was going to really sink the Hurricanes, and especially where they were at that time. So Jordan Staal gets injured, or at least pulls himself out of game action in early December. And that month was not a good month for the Hurricanes. He comes back in late December, still not right. And while he was out there in December, the Hurricanes did not have a good record. They won maybe one or two games.
Yep.
He comes back, survives, a game and a half maybe?
Yep.
Played a game and a half. And comes back out of the lineup because of the lingering issues. So at that point, you're looking at it, and you're like, oh, boy, you know, the Hurricanes were not good without him. You saw a few years ago when he broke his leg, the Hurricanes not that good without him. Because you lose – Jordan Staal brings so much to this team. But for Lucas Walmark, a lot was asked of him while Jordan Staal was out, and he rose to the occasion. So, I totally agree that he's one of them for sure.
And Walmark was the guy who was getting the Jordan Staal minutes when things started to turn around in January, playing that role, being the penalty killer, being in that role of going up against the other team's top center. And he is not, you know, 6'4", 220 like Jordan Staal. He doesn't wear down guys like that. The other guy, I think there was fanfare about it, but if you go back, it's not just on the ice and off. It's the off the ice. It's Jordan Martinook.
Yeah. Well, that's what when you posed that question, his name popped into my head.
Yep.
Fanfare locally, for sure.
Yes.
The Hurricanes fans know exactly what Martinook meant to this team. I don't think if you ask somebody nationally, if you were to ask a hockey fan in California, you know, they wouldn't be able to say, oh, Jordan Martinook was crucial to the Hurricanes' success. Hurricanes fans know exactly what he meant. And
the coaching staff knew.
Exactly. And I think his return to the series in Game 6, first round here.
Against
the Capitals. That was probably the difference maker in that first round series, I truly believe. Because the Hurricanes in Game 5, with him watching up on press row, he was
one of the analysts in the second period, I know, on the radio call with yours truly and Tripp Tracy.
And he was watching up on press row, and just it was killing him. He was losing his mind that he wasn't able to be down there with his teammates. And you saw him come back in Game 6, make that emotional return.
Yep.
Couldn't really skate, but that didn't stop him from being a part of everything. And I think that helped the Hurricanes win the last two games of that series.
No, I will not disagree. That's why he's on the list. Now, I said three, and I was going to have a tie,
mm-hmm.
but I'm not going to tie. I'm going to go with the guy who's here for the whole year. That's why we go unsung, because Greg McKegg was a guy I could sneak in
for sure.
Being unsung for what he did. But I'm going to go with Trevor Van Riemsdyk.
Yeah,
I can
see that.
Again, none of these guys are going to score 30 goals or put up even 75 points in a league in a season. But Trevor Van Riemsdyk, didn't matter who you played him with, didn't matter what role you put him in, same game, night in, night out, night in, night out, just really consistent. And I think you saw that the blue line, and again, it's that whenever you say a guy goes out and then somebody comes in, that's usually pointing the finger at somebody else. But I think we saw exactly how much he meant to this team because of how steady he is and where you could put him in those positions and what Dean Chenault running the blue line could do with the six regulars he had for the majority of the year. But Trevor Van Riemsdyk, under the radar the whole season, but just real steady, doesn't do anything super flashy, but he does everything pretty well. And he was one of those guys who, when he wasn't in the lineup, I think that was when you kind of noticed, he does a lot of things that can really, really help this team and get him to this spot.
I think you could make an argument for Trevor Van Riemsdyk / Calvin DeHaan, because I think he fits the same bill in a lot of manner. It's Slavin and Pesci and Falk and Dougie Hamilton are going to get the majority of the tension on the Hurricanes blue line, and for good reason. They're the ones that can really hurt you in all areas of the ice, potentially. It's Trevor Van Riemsdyk and Calvin DeHaan who are just going to be – they're not going to make those critical mistakes in their own end, you know, too much.
Yeah.
And those are the guys that you're going to rely upon to just do the little things right. The things that not everybody is going to notice and not everybody is going to appreciate, but – it's going to make a difference on the ice, and those two do it.
You brought up Jordan Martinook returning from injury. How about Calvin DeHaan returning from injury as well in the postseason?
Yeah.
To give the Hurricanes that spark. And that DeHaan and Van Riemsdyk pairing, that would be a solid number two pairing or your 3-4 pairing pretty much anywhere else in the league.
Yeah.
I mean, they teams would love to have those two guys occupying that role, and that's the thing. You can do that. So just wanted to throw that out there. If there's anybody who was unsung, you seem to agree with the three that I have, so I feel like...
Yeah, and I toss Calvin DeHaan into the mix, good, too.
Right? And Greg McKegg, so we could have gone five.
Yeah.
Honorable mentions.
Yep.
But, yeah, Calvin DeHaan, he's one of those guys who you just... He does everything so good defensively, so smart with the puck, and that's what the Canes have built. That, by the way, is the area of the Hurricanes when people ask, you know, what needs to change? What needs to change? I'm like, the first thing I can tell you what doesn't need to change is the blue line.
Yeah, exactly.
I know that there is talk, and we will get to that, but instead we'll get to...
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
And I'm going to go the Twitter route for this. And Matty Herman asks, with a hashtag, like it, keep it, Mike Smith will have a like it, keep it for the next CaneCast. No, I'm going to send it back.
Yeah, you're going to send it back.
There's no way.
Yeah, I'm going to send it back, too.
Oh, my God.
I don't think... You know, the funny thing is, too...
You know it's coming.
And the funny thing is, I saw that tweet, and I was like, all right, I'm going to come up with one over the weekend. And
no, you didn't.
I didn't.
You didn't. Had a whole week.
Had a whole week. I could probably come up with one on the spot right now.
I know, but I do have one.
Okay.
All of the success that the Carolina Hurricanes have had this season, as we look into the positives, like you keep it, if not, it's going to make some players more attractive to outside organizations. So the Canes might not bring back everybody who they thought they were going to bring back this year.
Yeah, I'll take it. Absolutely. Especially a guy like Greg McKegg, who's going to be an unrestricted free agent, played a critical role on the Hurricanes fourth line in the second half of the season. He's a guy who is going to be attractive to other teams. He's going to be attractive to the Hurricanes. The question is, do they fill that role with somebody like Lucas Walmark? Do they fill that role with perhaps another center from Charlotte that played much of this season with the Checkers? He's most certainly boosted his value. So now it's a question of what kind of other suitors is he going to get?
Yep.
How much are the Hurricanes willing to approach him with? That's going to be one to watch. But he's just one of, I think, a few players who certainly, because of the success that the Hurricanes had this season, boosted their value heading into the offseason.
Yeah, and I mean, that being said, there are a couple of players who can't really go anywhere because the Canes – don't have a lot of unrestricted free agents.
And no.
As far as restricted free agents go, they have some that they've got to work on. Players like Hayden Fleury, Roland McEwen, Trevor Carrick on the blue line who are down in the minors.
All champions now.
Yep. Saku Menelenin is a restricted free agent. Patrick Brown is unrestricted. Then you have, of course, both goaltenders who are unrestricted. So does that run in the way that they play? Does that make them, you know, a little bit more attractive outside the organization than somebody else? And then for the Canes, you know, Greg McKegg, Michael Ferland are unrestricted for this club. So you know that somebody, if they don't get signed before July 1st, somebody's going to offer them a contract.
Yep.
We'll go from there. All right. Do you have one while we were doing that? Or just move on to the
we'll questions? Just move on.
All right, fine.
I was sort of simmering on one, but we'll move on.
You know what?
In the spirit of CanesCast, I'm not going to have one.
Let it simmer and then forget about it for next week when we do this.
Perfect. So, I'll be there.
All right. I have one for you. This one from the Florida Caniac. What do you feel the primary position focus for the NHL draft for the Canes will be? I'm thinking mostly offensive with special teams in mind. I think that I'm going to take a free money answer on this one. They have the luxury of taking the best player available with right. every pick that they have. Their focus is we're going to take the guy who we think is going to be an NHL player slash stud that they get that opportunity. There's not going to be, oh, well, we need a right winger who did. Nope. If yeah. there's a center, if there's a defenseman, if there's somebody who they look at who they feel this is the guy they have weighted highest on their board, that's what they're going to take. Now, again, you're drafting 28th in the first round. Now you got a whole bunch of picks next to each other because of the trades you've made with the second rounders you've acquired. But this isn't one of these things where do they take the stud defenseman with pick number 5 or do they take – you know, the 5'8" sniper who's scored 75,000 goals the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. They have the luxury of just saying, no, this is the best player. And if the best player at that spot is a defensive defenseman, or if it's a goalie, or if it what if that's what I think they're gonna do with this draft. I think yeah. that's what it's gonna be. Or even better, they can dangle those picks and maybe improve
right.
to that. Now when you talk about the organization philosophy from the Florida Caniac, which was a good question. Yeah, they're going to want to improve the offense, and in particular, the power play.
Yeah, but that's not something – it's not something that you're going to draft for and then insert those players next season.
Yeah.
That's more of
– down the line.
Improving the power play is something that's going to take either systematic tweaks or personnel tweaks. I mean, it's you can't draft for it and then insert those players and yeah. – voila, everything is fixed. But yeah, it's best player available because really in the draft, you're drafting a skill set. You're drafting a player yep. who has tools in his toolbox that could be enhanced over the next few seasons. You're drafting based on potential. So that's really what it boils down to.
All right. You got one?
Yeah, we've got some more Twitter questions here. Here's one from James Thomas at Caniac1979 on Twitter. Do you expect the Canes to be active at the draft on the trade front? What players or positions might the Canes be looking at if they're trading at the draft? Thanks, Mike. And I'll assume he's just thanking us both since we share the same name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I expect the Hurricanes to be active at the draft on the trade front. I think that's when you look at some of the most likely scenarios of how the Hurricanes could improve outside of free agency, I think you have to look at draft weekend trades. You saw last year the Hurricanes acquiring Dougie Hamilton and Michael Ferlin, and at the time the rights to Adam Fox at the draft. That yep. was, other than the draft itself and selecting Andrei Svechnikov second overall, that was the highlight of the weekend. So, yeah, I think it could happen this year.
To that end, I also think that are they going to make a trade? You know, if they're going to do that, what would they be looking for? Go back to the Florida Caniacs question. They'll be looking for an offensive player who can help the power play.
Yep.
That's what they would be looking for. All right. I got one for you.
Okay.
This one comes from Matt Herman, who's already had a great like it, keep it mm-hmm. for us here today. Mm-hmm. Of all the returning players for next season's training camp, AHL included, who do you think will have the most offseason improvement or will be capable of cementing a job in the big club like Warren Fogle did this year? Great question. I have two names. We've already touched on one, and that's Martin Natchez.
Yep.
The other for me is Morgan Geekie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Morgan
he's one
Geekie
to watch.
Could be the Warren Fogle of next year's Carolina Hurricanes team, meaning he does everything right and he makes it impossible to send him back down to Charlotte.
Yeah. Mike Vellucci said he began the season on the fourth line. They weren't really sure what they had in him because it's first full professional season. And just throughout the season, everything they told him to yep. do, all the video they showed him, he just got it. He got it. He continually got better and he's centering their first line in the playoffs. So, yep. I can see him maybe making a jump, at least standing out and giving the yep. coaching staff a tough decision. He'd be a name I watch. I think you could make an argument for Alex Nedeljkovic. I know, you know, he's been up before. He started, got his first win in his first start this season. But he's one that, depending on what happens with the goaltending situation, could make that jump up to the big club.
You got another one?
Yes. From Dustin Bivens, Braves.
Oh, Canes, Dustin Bivens said, and he's running the show.
Cats and Bees.
Bell Biv DeVoe. Never mind.
Okay. Do you think we'll? Do you think the Hurricanes will ever trade for the other Aho and put him on the same line as our Sebastian Aho? Well,
let me answer that. No, because the Islander Sebastian Aho is a defenseman.
That's correct. I mean, it might be fun to like take a picture of it, but no, it's
no,
not gonna happen.
No.
I'm this going with this Aho on, is no. The best Aho anyway.
Full on. Well, no, they're not going to trade for him and put him on a line with
that's correct.
The Finnish Sebastian Aho.
Yep. Here's one from Mark Salyer. I almost said Slayer. I almost transposed like the L and the A. First, love the podcast. Never missed an episode.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you very much. Will the Canes sign Brock McGinn before free agency starts? I personally think he is a Rod Brind'Amour type player and would love to see the Canes sign him to a long-term contract. Go Canes.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this one. Restricted free agents can actually start taking offers from other teams on June 23rd.
Well, the Hurricanes could qualify Brock McGinn with a restricted free agent offer, which would happen before July 1st. Yeah. But I believe McGinn is also arbitration eligible.
June 23rd, I think, if I said July 23rd, sorry.
I believe McGinn's also arbitration eligible, so that complicates things a bit because if the Hurricanes don't offer him what he believes is fair, then they can go to a third party who will settle the whole thing. I'll be interested to see what the Hurricanes do because I think you go back. He had an okay season this year. His season last year, talking about 2017-18, was better than 18-19. But he scored 20 goals in 17-18. So you see what kind of potential is there.
16 goals.
Oh, 16 goals.
Sorry.
Sorry. Sorry, Brock. I elevated you.
Don't be sorry. I think he wants you to be the arbitrator if you've got him at 20.
Yeah. He scored 16 goals in 17-18.
But in the playoffs, he was huge.
Yeah.
The game-winning goal in double overtime, Game 7 against the Capitals. Before that, what, in the third period, the dive across the crease and clears the puck from going in to get to overtime. So he's going to be an interesting call for me. I do agree, though, with Mark Salyer that is a Rod Brind'Amour type player.
Mm-hmm.
It's a guy he would love to have on the team, and you know the role that he can play, and he's a hell of a penalty killer. So,
and he can be a physical presence as well, especially if the Hurricanes don't end up re-signing Michael Ferland. You're going to need somebody to replace that element. He's not at that physical level that Ferland's at, but he can still – it's still a part of his game, and that's something the Hurricanes are going to have to replace if Ferland does not return.
The other thing, too, and Michael said what makes this an interesting development is the arbitration process. Mm-hmm. So they could go to arbitration, then it gets done, snap. And he's a member of the Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah, so that'll be one to watch.
All right. No, that's a good one. This
one more?
We got a couple more.
Okay. Oh, yeah, a couple more.
I've got this one from Aiden Calhoun.
Yes.
Aside from the draft coverage that you guys are getting ready for, what else are you doing to occupy yourselves during the off season? We both have jobs with the team. Michael Smith, as I have dubbed him, the Web's Michael Smith. Anytime there's a press release, anything that gets put up on the website, that's Michael Smith. He does that. So he always has plenty to do.
Yeah.
Me, on the other hand, I work for Canes Vision in the offseason, so there's lots of stuff that I do, helping with videos.
Voiceover work.
Voiceover stuff. They need commercials that need to be written for anything along those lines, anything that goes on in the arena, and they need a voice for it.
Mm-hmm.
I do all that stuff. Yeah. And then we do stuff for the Web that Mike gets to post after I do
and then
interviews and whatnot.
We record these once a week.
That's it, yeah. And plus, we've got a few other, you know, various and sundry.
Then we take vacations and go to concerts.
Try to, yeah. Try to. Well, we've already done one of them.
Yep.
Went to a concert. We'll see if there's anything else to get into.
I've got one.
Oh, do you now?
From Mike Mathis.
Yes.
At Caniac Mathis. Patty Brown, Patrick Brown, impending UFA, seems like the perfect fourth-line center for a team like the Canes, right? Is it more important for him to be the captain in Charlotte or on the main roster next year? Really, really good question, because you saw what sort of impact he had as the captain in Charlotte. But he could fill a potential fourth-line center role, and you saw what he brought to this club in the playoffs as a player in that sort of role. He wasn't I believe he played wing in the playoffs, but he's he's a potential option there. I think the Hurricanes have a few options for that fourth line center position, whether it's Greg McKegg, whether it's Lucas Wellmark, whether it's Patrick Brown. There are a few ways the Hurricanes could go. Even Jordan Martinuk plays center, or did play center a bit this season. It's a good question. I can see it going either way, whether he fits that fourth line center role, or if he returns to Charlotte, he's unquestionably their captain again. He did a great job leading that club this year.
Yeah. You want to get into another player signing for another team? Because that question's been asked.
Yeah, we can talk about it.
Sure. Mr. Mustache, can you believe the Skinner contract? I'm baffled. Apparently assists and defense don't matter in this league. Not if you want to get paid. Goals are what gets you paid. You score 40 goals, you get paid.
He had a career season in a contract year and got paid.
Yep.
And that's what happened.
My feeling on that, like, because everybody is looking at the number.
Yeah.
Look,
the contract number?
Yeah.
It's large.
Eight years, $9 million a year. Here's the thing.
Good for him.
He was going to get that number or something extremely close to it if he got to free agency. He was sent to a team that when he scored 40 goals and they are desperate for offense.
Exactly.
They have no choice.
Yep.
I mean, it was perfect. And I am somebody, whenever we talk about these situations, management, don't be listening right now. I'm pro player the whole way. Get every penny that you're worth. But that's it. But when you talk about defense and assists, nobody's getting $9 million a season because they're a great defensive player.
Not even Patrice Bergeron. No. He makes less than seven, doesn't
yeah.
he?
He's not even the highest paid player on highest paid center on the Bruins. I think David Krejci makes more than he does.
Yeah.
But you score 40 goals in this league, that's what puts butts in seats, and people are going to pay you for that. So that's it. And again, don't begrudge him for anything. He gets the deal, goes in. Michael and I, actually, the funny thing is some people have been tweeting out the number the last 2 years of the deal. It's not $9 million a season. It's less than that, but I mean, still, it's like, I think $12 million spread out over the last 2 years of the contract. It's a good chunk of change to have.
Yeah.
Not a bad thing to be in. But, you know, when you say, I guess defense and assists don't matter, not when it comes contract time.
Yeah.
Goals will always rule the day.
And like you said, the Sabres are a team that needs goals, and they found a guy in Jeff Skinner who can provide goals. Now, is he going to score 40 next year? Mm-hmm. I would say probably not, but maybe he does.
Maybe he does.
He tends to have those
peaks and valleys.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if he hit a valley next year, but maybe not.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be playing with Jack Eichel as
right.
his center.
And when you have that, it's, you know, you're probably going to pencil him in for 20 at least.
The odd thing, I don't know if you saw the stat, is he is fourth in the league, I think, in the last 4 years in even strength goals.
Mm.
Like, I mean, he's behind Alex Ovechkin, mm-hmm. like the guys you'd expect him to
right.
be behind.
Right.
And that's it. But look, that's the NHL, man. And if he was here and scored 40, you know, you don't want to say that's what the market says, but that's what the asking price is.
Well, that's the thing. That if he's here and scores 40, then it becomes an entirely different discussion, I think, because then, you know, if you sign him to that, then Sebastian Aho.
What does he get? Yeah. Well, that's the
and
other
that
thing,
that still
too.
Might complicate. I don't know.
What everybody is going to be wringing their hands over is, well, what does this mean for? And, you know, Toronto's freaking out because they've got to sign Mitch Marner, who's
right.
restricted. Sebastian Aho's got to get a contract done here with the Carolina Hurricanes. And, you know, he put in 30 and was a point-per-game player. So does that, you know, whatever numbers they were at, does the Aho camp come back and say, well, look at this.
Yeah.
We're a point-per-game player and only a few goals off of that pace. So it'll be interesting to see. And, yeah, David Krejci does make more than Patrice Bergeron in the quick look-up for you. So, all right. That'll do it, I believe, for this episode of the Canes Cast. Thank you for all the questions. Good questions.
Yes. Thank you, everybody.
Is there anything else that you want to get into?
I don't think so.
Bill Berniston was a little upset with you, the strength and conditioning coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, that you talked about having lunch with him because he always has the aversion to us talking about food.
Right.
He said he did you a favor. You were sitting all by yourself.
Well, no.
And he just wanted to sit next to you and make you feel better, and then you did that.
That's erroneous.
Okay.
I was sitting next to two fine gentlemen.
All right. Well, that's not the story that was told to me.
Yeah, well, Bill must be hard of seeing.
Wow.
He's going to be really mad at me now. I just called him blind.
I am not going to get in between the two of you. Normally,
I figured he would be mad because I mentioned us, having lunch together and food, and I know he loves that. Now I'm bringing it up again, so it's probably going to make him mad again.
I brought it up again, technically.
Sorry, Bill. Actually, I'm not.
I know you're not.
You know where to find me.
Yeah, and he will.
Yeah, he will.
So
actually, don't. Please don't.
If you are going to find him, though, Bill, let me know, and that'll be our video portion of the Canes Cast. All right, that'll do it for episode 93. For the Web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We will be here next Monday, and we'll talk to you then.
Adios.
Thank you.